Hi, welcome to another episode of the Beyond Blocks podcast, a podcast about Drupal, PHP, open source, and related software development topics. I'm Oliver Davis. Today, I'm happy to be joined by my guest, Jess Archer. Hi,
Hello,
Jess. How are you?
everybody. I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
I am really good. I'm glad we've managed to find time to speak because time zones are a thing. You're in Australia, I'm in the
Yes.
UK. So.
Yes, bit of a time jump, but yeah, it's currently just past 9 p.m. for me, so yeah.
Yeah,
What time is it for you there?
just past midday, so 12,
Okay,
12:08.
nice.
So, yeah, not unfamiliar. We were just saying before we recorded with time zones and things when I was working for the association and me being in the UK and everybody being in mostly Portland or US or everything else. But yeah, time zones are fun.
Indeed.
Yeah, actually got to sit down with some of the DA guys at the DrupalCon conference recently, which was fun. But I digress. Cool. Yeah. Thanks for taking the time. For people who maybe aren't be aware, do you want to share a bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure. So, well, I'm from Brisbane, Australia. I'm a PHP developer for probably going on 20 years now. I currently work for Laravel on the core team there. And I get to work on a lot of cool open source stuff. Yeah, love PHP.
Yeah, I think we definitely agree with you on that one. Yeah, like I said, we said a little bit about this before the episode as well. I guess yeah, I've come across Laravel a lot more from my sort of community stuff with organizing PHP user groups and just speaking at conferences and things. I use collections quite often, like typically,
Oh, nice. Yeah.
as into like Adam Wathen's refactor into collection stuff, and I think a lot of the testing stuff I do is from probably again probably from Adam's testing course and things, but yeah, using it as a framework, I don't think I do too much of the day to day. So I guess I'd say more of an observer of things, and I'll take things from where I see possible and then useful, and then try and sort of bring them all together, I guess. But yeah, I'm sort of a Laravel observer, but an
Nice. I mean,
outsider definitely in terms of
I've been a
things.
Drupal observer. I kind of started out in the whole WordPress area, and then kind of switched to Laravel. So I kind of skipped over Drupal. I think I probably built like one site in Drupal, but I was kind of very heavily in the WordPress side of things. And back then, it was like they kind of solved the same sorts of problems, and WordPress was just the one that I knew. Yeah.
Yeah, I think what's actually quite interesting, I think, is that people do tend to sort of put themselves or categorize themselves as a WordPress developer or a Laravel developer or a Drupal developer. But speaking to people, there's a lot of overlap, and not so much, like
Yes.
maybe they do multiple things, but people will start with one thing and move on to something else. Simon Vasliotis, I'm going to get that name
Ah,
wrong.
yes. Yep.
Simon Swiss, yeah,
Simon
who's like
Swiss, yeah.
involved with like Drupal 6 or Drupal 5 or something. I haven't spoke to him with some of his Tailwind courses. Need to get Simon on the pod actually as well. No, I said no, mental note. But yeah, it's
He
interesting
was the
how
one that
people
got me
do
into
go
Tailwind
across.
CSS. He was my gateway into that whole world.
Yeah, oh, I can see that for sure. Yeah, I remember Simon doing a talk about utility first before Tailwind was even a thing. So
Exactly. Yeah.
when he
I think he
went.
was talking about tachyons.
That's right. Yeah. I remember doing that. Yeah. Press like DB. And I look back at that and go, what does DB mean? And yeah, it's slightly too abstract for me, with I think Tailwind
Yeah.
hits it right on the money in terms of being verbose enough, but not too verbose, I think, for me.
Yes. And I've gotten very crafty with their arbitrary syntax and all the random cool stuff you can do.
Yeah, I find myself using that more. I was a little bit on the fence with that one to begin with, because part of having utilities and tokens and things are you've got a set list of colors to pick from and a set list of spacing and etc. Like, so then people can then start doing arbitrary like 7 pixel padding, like that goes against one of the big
Yes.
pluses for me to begin with. But there are use cases for it. I do use them sparingly, but have done
Yeah,
some.
it's the exception, not the rule.
Yeah, I think I've watched Adam's talk from Rails World or something recently about Tailwind, and I was doing things with data attributes. And oh yeah, that's really interesting. So I've used that a lot more recently. So yeah, I watch a lot of YouTube. Watch a lot of YouTube videos. There's a lot of podcasts, so including things like Laracon and Rails, even though I don't work on them on a day to day. So that's
I always
probably
think it's
where
really
I.
good to kind of cross-pollinate and Like I went to a local Rails meetup. I've never used Rails, but just to get a vibe for the community and just see whether there's anything I could learn from them. You know, open source or everything in general, I think always works better when you kind of don't insulate yourself completely from everything else out there. So I love taking inspiration. I take a lot of inspiration from the JavaScript world. But yeah, Rails, all those sorts of things.
Yeah, I think I saw Nuno was in Scotland recently as well. He took a picture at a JavaScript meetup or something. It's
yeah, nice.
Good to go and learn some new things, which I think is awesome.
Yeah.
I think the first time I saw any of your content, I think you were doing work with JMac on Laravel Shift. I think probably that was probably the first things I saw. So yeah, I've been sort of following some of your content for a little while as well. So yeah, it's been interesting to see how. You know, I think then you've been streaming a bit yourself as well for a little while and. Doing like the
a little
Laracast
bit, yeah, Laracast
well.
And stuff, yeah.
So
yeah, I've tried to do a little bit of everything, but I don't think I'm super committed. I mean, I co-hosted a podcast for probably a few years with JMac. That was really fun.
That's was that base code podcast or is that something
yeah,
else?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, base code.
Ah, cool. Hey, I was like, I knew that's there somewhere, and it starts with a B, and it's not base camp, it's something, and then
yes.
Got there. Awesome.
Like
so
code base, but base code.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. Cool. That's really interesting. But yeah, you know, and I'm a NeoVim user as well. So yeah, I was watching your NeoVim stuff on Laracasts for a while and still refer back to that every so often. But, yeah, a lot of really sort of interesting stuff. So yeah, that's cool.
I do enjoy my NeoVim and enjoy my terminals, which, you know, brings us to the thing that I think we might want to talk about a little bit. Which would be the prompt stuff that I've did pretty heavily last year.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I watched the video of you. Yeah, you sort of like sort of announcing, I guess, Laravel prompts. I think that was at the time going, oh, that looks really interesting and cool. Being a fellow terminal person, yeah, sort of went away. I thought that's really cool. I can see that would be fun. I can see obviously it's looking. Good, improving the Laravel sort of core experience. And then also, I guess, Joe, I guess surnames again, Tannenbaum.
Tannenbaum, yep.
Speaking about it again more recently, and I love that talk that he did. I saw a tweet from him about that, actually, about doing snippets and things for a talk, which also is something I do quite a lot with. I do like Lua Stip snippets for code demos and things, which I thought was cool.
Yeah.
Saw that talk. And then I was updating... I can't remember which project it was. It might have been just one of my Docker examples, but I upgraded it onto Drupal 11, which is the newest version, and then had to upgrade Drush, which is the Drupal shell, Drush. And yeah, it was like, oh, this looks different. And then did a quick screenshot of it. And then someone said, oh yeah, Drush is using Laravel prompts. And suddenly these two things that I had connected, like suddenly just smashed together. Because it's like, hey, this thing from over here is now using this thing from over there. So I thought, yeah, that was really cool. So yeah, I don't know. Do you want to explain a bit about more what Laravel prompt is for people who maybe haven't come across it before?
Sure. So I guess like anytime you're in your terminal and you building a terminal application where you need to collect input from the user, you would want to prompt them for information, similar to on a website where you'd create like a text input or a text area or a select box or any of those sorts of things. It's handy to have things like that in the terminal. And we already had this through Symfony. So Symfony's console component gives you a whole set of components for collecting user input via the terminal. And so Laravel was using those components for things like our installer. So when you install Laravel, it asks you, you know, which testing framework do you want to use? Do you want to use any starter kits? All these sorts of questions. A lot of our scaffolding commands when you run, you know, PHP artisan make model. And if you don't type the name of the model, rather than throwing an error, I made it so that it prompts you for the name of the model. And then it can ask you some optional things like, do you want a migration? All these sorts of things. And we were happily using the Symfony components. But I was playing with Vue, like Vue CLI, which is in Node. And their installer blew me away with like how cool the prompts were. So like you could use the arrow keys and like select boxes would like go up and down the page and had like scrolling internally inside the terminal in these little lists. And I kind of looked at like what we had with Symfony and was like, oh, I really wish that Symfony's ones were a bit more like the Node ones. And so I thought, well, let's have a go and see how hard could this possibly be. And it turns out it was actually really hard, but it was one of those things that once you kind of commit to it and you get like a bit of a proof of concept going, then it's like, okay, this is worth it. But then you hit the next challenge, but you've kind of already had a little bit of a high from the first one. So you keep going and you keep getting more highs and then going into these like deep abysses of this is impossible. And then you kind of come through that. So eventually,
I know the feeling.
Finished a version of Laravel prompts that I was really, really happy with. One of my goals, it was kind of a side goal, but for me, it was a pretty important one, was to make prompts like PHP, like for PHP in general, not like something Laravel specific, but I wanted to make it something that any PHP app could benefit from. And so, yeah, we launched Laravel prompts at Laracon in 2023, so last year, July last year. So it's been out for just over a year now, I think. And yeah, the best way to describe it is it gives you like almost like HTML form like inputs in your terminal, which for like, you know, a web-based framework like Laravel, you know, you think like, what has it got to do with the terminal? So, but it's more for those things where the framework itself needs to prompt you. But there's also a lot of people that build their own commands in Laravel for doing various things. All those sorts of use cases. You might write little utilities that you use to, you know, run custom scripts, all this sort of stuff. And it's nice to be able to get that user input. So yeah, that's kind of how prompts sort of started. It was pretty cool. Like when I was getting ready to demo it, I thought like, oh, this is like cool to me. Like I, you know, live in NeoVim, all this sort of stuff. Like I think terminals are cool, the whole matrix kind of vibe. But I kind of figured like the world has moved past terminals now and they're not really exciting. But the like reception that I got at Laracon was just, there's like a really great photo of me where I think I was just pushing up and down like arrows on my keyboard and like the thing was selecting and I had to like pause for people clapping.
That's right. Yeah.
And it just like, it was such a cool moment to get that appreciation for something that I thought was really, really cool. And to like realize that everyone else actually thought it was as cool as I did. So yeah, it's been amazing. And then, yeah, I found out that Drush started using it and that was ridiculously exciting for me to see it like spread outside of the Laravel ecosystem, being one of my goals to try and give back to PHP in general. So yeah.
That's interesting. That's one of the key. What is it that made you want to make it like PHP, say, I guess, framework agnostic? Because I think that's one of the sort of, with the exception maybe of collections, they used to be, I think, installed through a Titan package. I think that was always one of the sort of criticisms I used to hear a lot is with Laravel, is that it's not, you can't just pull Eloquent into another project, for example. Yeah, maybe you can. But,
I think you can, but it's a bit tricky.
For example. whereas being then looking at like the Symfony components, then like they are built as these standalone things. So why was it important to you to make prompt something that any PHP framework could use?
I guess like this is from my perspective. So like not speaking on behalf of Laravel or Taylor or anything, but I guess like I thought it was really cool. We were using a lot of Symfony components and things like their console component that we were able to use in our project because of Symfony. And so it was kind of like, well, I didn't see any technical reason why prompts couldn't be a standalone package. And that it would be really cool to maybe eventually get it into Composer, things like that as well. So yeah, it was just a case of, if I could do it, then why not? So it was like, it was not like a hard goal. It wasn't like, if it was too hard, then like I could have just gone, okay, cool, we'll just build this into the framework. But there was a few little things I had to kind of do special to make prompts play nicely standalone, but also play nicely in Laravel. I could go into all sorts of detail about like how we've got like a blank line in between inputs. But if you output other content in Laravel, just, you know, like informational text in between prompts, the prompts is kind of aware of what output has gone on the output buffer before it. And so it knows, oh, the previous output didn't leave any new lines. So I need to add one to create the blank line and then I need to put my own stuff. But if the previous one added an extra new line, then prompts knows, okay, I don't need to do that. So they have to like share this same output buffer instance so that they're aware of each other's output effectively. But then when prompts is standalone, it has its like it has a whole separate output buffer instance that it like mews up its own one. So yeah, little things like that that would have been a bit easier if I did Laravel only, but at the end of the day, I'm very, very glad that I kind of persisted with it.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think that's the same sort of approach I'll tend to use with things. And if I can maybe extract that out into a different library or separate package or something, and then maybe build some sort of bridge or adapter, so usually I'll try and do it as well. Just then it's going to have more reuse for everybody else, really. I can't think what it was. There was a project I remember seeing somebody wrote. It's probably a, I can't remember what it was. No point in guessing. But it looked really interesting to me at the time. And I remember, oh, I wish I could just compose require this. But it was like it was very Laravel specific. But like the but the cool thing of it wasn't. I remember thinking then, like, I wish they'd have done this in a way that they've maybe extracted this core piece of logic into its own thing, and then maybe put the like the Laravel parts of like an add-on or something. Yeah, I can't remember what it was. It's not important, but it's yeah, really interesting to see that. Yeah, that was, you know, even if it wasn't just like hard gold, it's like a, just something you were hoping to achieve from it. So,
yeah, I mean, there's certain things you could build that I guess would kind of more tightly couple to the framework if they're like depending on a whole lot of other Illuminate components, things like that. If it's depending on Eloquent or something like that, then that would be pretty tricky. But if it doesn't have like a lot of other dependencies, and prompts depended on collections up until probably this week. So it had one like Laravel dependency. We removed that. So you mentioned Adam Weathern's refactoring to collections. I had to go through the process of refactoring away from collections, which was much more painful than refactoring to collections. The whole reason though was because Laravel framework depends on prompts, and prompts was depending on Laravel framework effectively. So we had this like circular dependency thing that every time we needed to release a new major version, we had to kind of like do this like manual incrementing step and all this sort of stuff. So yeah, we went and just removed all our internal use of collections, but we managed to still support collections. So you can still pass a collection to prompts for like the multi-selects and the selects. But internally, we don't have to have, we don't rely on the collections package being installed, which is nice.
That's interesting. It's like you said at the beginning, like, how hard can this be? And I think a lot of the stuff you just said, but yeah, it's yeah a bit more complex. I think we all go into these things with, yeah, how hard can it be? And then we start uncovering things, and like, we've started now. We've committed so far. Yeah. So far down this rabbit hole, so I'm going to stick with it. So
yeah, the whole sunk cost fallacy, which, you know, sometimes benefits us and sometimes, you know, doesn't.
Yeah, it's like, no, should I just continue with this, or should I step away and walk away from it?
I was really fortunate because I got to build it on like build it in work time as well. So I kind of it gives you that extra bit of pressure as well though, because if you do have to abandon something, then you kind of feel bad of like, I've spent all this company time doing this.
But it also makes
it a lot easier because I don't have to like find, you know, an hour here or an hour there, because some of these problems were like multi-day kind of just bashing my head against my keyboard kind of things.
So are you like adding to like to-do comments in your code person, or do you keep, how do you manage all those if they're like multi-day things? How do you sort of keep track of all that?
I kind of, it depends on the problem. Sometimes if it's got like a really clear case of input output type of thing, I'll just try and write a test for it. If it's like something that's like I know that I need to fix later, and it's not like staring, it's not going to stare me in the face, then I will put it on a list. But generally I just try and rely on things that are broken or not working constantly just like annoying me until I fix them. Mm-hmm. So they'll just kind of, yeah, be in my face constantly. And yeah.
Yeah. There's certain things I'm working on projects, and yeah, it's like, oh, something happens, I'll fix it next time. But right now I'm just going to press the button that fixes it. And I said this probably 10 times. And eventually I will have to fix the problem. Like, I can just stop it. But it's just taking the time to actually fix it. So
yeah. And I find like if I end up with a long enough list that I start feeling overwhelmed, then I will just write it down. I've got like a notepad that I keep beside my keyboard. And if my brain's kind of feeling like overwhelmed with like, I'm kind of five problems deep, it's like I'm fixing one problem and I find another one, and then that one spawns another one. And then I'm like, I feel like there's 100 problems. I go and specifically write them all out. And then I realize, oh, there's only four. And then I can kind of just go through them all. But yeah.
Yeah, what you mean. Yeah. Do you find that actually like writing that down, like you said, if you're like an actual paper notebook is better than like usually I'll just start like a new tab in Vim and start typing a to-do list there, but do you find
I
that it's better
find
to have
like I
that
do
mental
those a lot,
separation?
like kind of per project ones. But sometimes if I've got things that are like going across projects, I don't like have like a central to-do list. So I kind of like to like follow, like very loosely follow the whole bullet journaling thing where I write all the things on a list and then they're like items for the day. And then if I just, you know, cross them off when I'm done. And then the next day, I'll generally rewrite all the ones I haven't done. I'll write them out again. And that's like this process of like migrating. And the whole point of doing that is it makes you reassess whether that thing is actually still as important as you thought it was when you added it to the list. I find that's really helpful. This kind of makes writing things down like pretty guilt-free because you know that you don't have to do them. You'll reassess it tomorrow and then rewrite it out under the current day or just go and cross it off. And yeah.
But the journaling, the one we sort of start off with, like almost, well, I guess with a bullet or a line, and then you sort of draw a line through it when it's done, or sort
Yeah,
of you
there's
sort of
like
mark into
a
a
there's a bit
style
of
or
a kind of
something.
yeah, there's a there is like a system. I mean, I don't know that I follow it like 100%. I kind of just took the bits that made sense for me. So yeah, you start with just like a dot as the bullet. If you complete it, you turn it into a cross. So you just kind of draw a cross through it with the dot in the center so that it looks like that. If you decide to abandon it, you just put a line through the whole thing. If you migrate it forward, you do like a little greater than symbol on top of the dot, and that's kind of indicating that that item has been moved forward to another day. And so then when you kind of scan over the previous day, you can kind of just basically look for dots and ignore anything that's not a dot. There are things where you can put like
Yeah.
exclamation points or
Interesting.
asterisks to make things important, but I don't tend to, yeah, go that full on with it. But I do find the
Yeah.
act of actually writing it out, for me at least, I don't know. It makes me stop, take a beat, and think about it, and keeps everything kind of consolidated. If I'm working on across multiple projects, it kind of just keeps them all together. So yeah, it's almost like a little mini mindfulness practice of what's still important now and what have I got to get done.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've tried like various sort of note taking or to do list sort of tools, like online ones, like kind of what they call now. But recently, for some reason, Task Warrior came up on my YouTube feed, so that's like a terminal based to do list.
I think I
And
used to use Task Warrior. Yeah.
don't know how it's or why it showed it for some reason, but I've been sort of, yeah, playing with that recently just to sort of just see how it goes. But yeah, I've seen Carl Polline is the guy who does a lot of productivity and time blocking stuff. He's been writing a lot about paper and to-do notes again recently. And yeah, it might be something I need to look at. Just,
It has like
yeah, just try.
Limitations, like the fact that you can't just manually move something forward to today's list, that to me is actually that good thing of making you deliberately rewrite it. And like as you turn the page, the other items kind of there disappear from view. So you kind of get this clean slate pretty easily where
Yeah.
you, yeah, again, deliberately move things forward. The fact that like it's not available just constantly in your pocket to me is also kind of a selling point. It like just lives beside my keyboard. So I don't tend to
Yeah.
put like personal items on that. I still just you put those on my phone if I need to remember to, you know, shopping lists, all that sort of stuff. So I pretty much use it exclusively just for work tasks and to kind of plan my day. And yeah, any of those things that pop up in the morning when I check my emails. I mean, I work for, you know, an international company, so while I'm asleep, people are kind of adding work to my inbox. So when I wake up in the morning, that's like go through and look at all the things that have happened overnight while I was asleep, and I just write them all down, and then I can just, yeah, process through them.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, it's something I was thinking of doing recently. So yeah, I have to maybe try it because I'm juggling sort of like day job stuff and then consulting stuff and then open source and side projects and everything else. It's just, yeah, how do you manage all that stuff? I'm always, like I said, almost like sunk cost fallacy again. It's this way works, but is there like also is there a grass is greener situation? Like, should I just stick with what I know and is working, or is it worth trying something else? But maybe I will try the
I think
paper
like
option
whatever's
to see.
working, I think that like I used to try and chase like the optimal setup and all that sort of stuff. Like if I could make this one change, my whole life is going to get simpler and better. But I think generally that's not the case. So these days I kind of go for like as light a touch as possible, just really simple and basic. And really I just noticed that when I write things down, then my brain isn't trying to keep track of a whole lot of things. And the like little anxiety ball in my stomach kind of goes away, because it's when the ideas or the list is in my head, it always is bigger than what it really is.
Definitely.
And so writing it down, everything all of a sudden looks achievable, bite-sized, and
this is true. But then I guess I also seen recently DHH tweeting and a lot about using, like, new of him actually, you see these people who've been using like Sublime Text avidly. I think Taylor's still in the Sublime Text sort of area as well. So it's really interesting to see people like, I know this tool, it works for me. And then, I was going to say defending it, that's the wrong word. But, you know, if it works for them, then, you know, why? You sort of need a good reason to switch, I guess. But it has been interesting to see, like, DHH tweeting about, Neil Vim and Zellig and other stuff quite recently.
Yeah, he's gone on a whole tangent, switch to Linux and NeoVim and all that sort of stuff, which I think is really cool. Each to their own.
Yeah, what's the Rails World Conference? I think, what did he say? It's fun to be competent. I think it was the thing. And I think some of it was about, if your apps run on Linux, then if you run Linux locally, then you'll know more about Linux, essentially. It's just a really interesting sort of take. But, it's good to get some more publicity on sort of NeoVim and that sort of same with prompts, I guess. It's like you said, you thought like this would just be cool to you, but then a lot of people liked it. But it does seem like Terminal seems cool again, I guess. It's sort of what I'm trying to say. But I'm not sure like why that is, or did it ever stop being? Because
it never stopped being cool for me. Like I
right, yeah.
I just have, early memories of seeing terminals, and I don't know, just something about them was really cool. Like it was probably around the time of the Matrix, so it probably has something to do with that. Cool vibes, hacker vibes, all those sorts of things. And there's just something really, I don't know, compelling about like typing into the terminal and kind of giving commands rather than kind of clicking around a UI with the mouse that, I don't know, it's, to me, things kind of feel faster. I think things feel, I don't know that like deterministic is the right word, but I like that the same set of keystrokes will do the same thing. Whereas with a mouse, you've got to very deliberately like look at where you're moving it to, because the starting point is always different. Whereas when you type a command, your fingers are just always repeating the exact same action, and they don't have to go, oh, where am I now? And where do I need to get to? It's just spew the command out and the same thing happens every time.
That's interesting. Yeah, I would watch it. I think actually it might have been Jeffrey Way with Laracast videos, but I think he's doing PHP Storm, and he was, remember, advocating for pressing like Control P to bring up like the command finder and hiding the sidebar and making things really minimal. Which, interesting. I thought Jeff is a Vim user. Jeffrey Way was a Vim user, but I think when I first watched Laracast. But now I think about it. But I've definitely carried on that sort of thought process for me. And it definitely seemed faster than trying to click around a file tree and find that one file that I want.
Even like I pretty much live exclusively between like terminal and a browser. So rather than, alt tabbing or command tabbing, because that's almost the same as like the mouse, right? Where like depending on where you start from, you've got to hit tab a different amount of times.
Yeah.
So I've just set it up so that I'm on Linux. So it's like the super key, basically like the Windows key. Windows key one is terminal, Windows key two is browser. If the app's not open, it'll open it. If it is open, it'll just switch to it. So no matter what, I just, in my head, I'm like, I need to get to my terminal, and I don't even have to really like consciously look for it or do anything. It just appears because the muscle memory just, I just hit that key combo and it's right there. So I kind of strive for that again. There's kind of like almost these like deterministic things that if you do the same thing, you'll get that same result, and you don't have to have that searching kind of mindset.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think I've seen Primogen talk about the same sort of thing, actually. Yeah, I do like command one goes to a browser, command two goes to a terminal, that sort of thing. I think I do something similar. But yeah, that's an interesting idea.
Even like I've seen like Taylor, he uses I don't know which one he uses these days, but you know, like Raycast and Alfred and all those sorts of things. You can do a similar sort of things with those where, you know, you'll hit the key combination to bring that open, and then you might type, like if you're switching to Firefox, maybe you just type FF or Fire or whatever it is. But whatever it is, it's the same keystrokes every time and gets you to the browser. So whether it's a keyboard shortcut or a search-based thing, whatever it is, I always find that much better than the hunting for things that happens with mouse and command tab and all those sorts of things.
Yeah, I remember using Alfred when I was using Mac stuff, and then, yeah, I would do something similar. Just the command, whatever, command space, I think it was, would open up the little window and you'd type something in it. Yeah, whereas now, yeah. So I'm running also Window Manager at the moment. So I'm using like Windows P, I think it is, that brings up the little prompt thing. Yeah, that's usually how I get into stuff, and you've got them assigned to different workspaces. So something similar to what you were just saying, like browser. Workspace one has a browser, workspace two has a terminal in it. So yeah, it's just nice for to go, I'm gonna move to this now and it's done. And whereas on
Yeah,
my
it just
work
kind
machine
of
I've got
keeps
alt
you
tabs through
like
stuff.
in your like train of thought. And so it's makes all that sort of stuff seamless, and the computer just feels like it's just responding to whatever you need it to do without you necessarily, like you still are telling it what to do, but it doesn't necessarily feel like it. It just feels like it's happening.
Yeah, it's that hacking mentality again. You're just doing stuff and stuff happens. It's awesome.
Yeah, and like it's a micro optimization, but it like there's the benefit of that it, you know, it saves you X number of milliseconds every single time, which adds up. But to me, it's more about the like not having to mentally like quickly switch to a different task effectively. Like switching windows is almost like a separate task. When it's just muscle memory, no train of thought. Like, yeah, the train of thought continues for what you were doing when you're switching between windows, all those sorts of things.
I guess lots of micro optimizations add up over the course of a day or a
Exactly,
year as
yeah.
well. So,
I mean, there's definitely the case, especially with something like NeoVim, where you potentially spend more time configuring it than maybe you benefit. But I think there's also a lot of value, even if the upfront investment doesn't completely pay off, it sometimes just makes me more excited about my day because things are feeling better, more like in tune with how I'm thinking. It just removes these little tiny friction points everywhere. And even just the act of like effectively like maintaining your tools, like, you know, sharpening your axes, all those sorts of things. It's the same sort of thing with your IDE and that, and just taking off those little rough edges and just customizing it to fit your hand, you know, whatever the case might be. I find it very worthwhile. But I also completely understand when people just, you know, want to have VS Code and use the defaults, and then they can just install it anywhere and work out of the box as well. There's no
Yeah.
one way of doing things.
No, and I feel that way. I think now I've been doing Vim full time. I'll have to go back and find the actual blog post, but it's definitely been a couple of years, a few years. But I remember before that going in to work for one agency, and they said we all use this editor. Like we want everyone to use this editor. So then, I think that they obviously had licenses for everybody. But then I think it was easier for pairing or easier to help each other out or something. And I don't know,
Yeah.
but at the
I feel
time it
like
was
that
what I
might be
used.
like
But
over
now I don't know.
optimizing in one area at the expense of, yeah, something else.
People still going to customize it though, right? They're still going to hide the sidebar or change the key bindings potentially, and it's not going to be exactly the same for everybody. But I don't know. It just happened. It was the one I used at the time, so it didn't matter too much. But now I don't know. But we'll see. But yeah, there is a way of like, yeah, you can probably take that too far. I seem to remember Ben Orenstein doing a Vim talk a lot a while ago about showing all the leader keys that he'd set up to like edit things. And I think I've done one before and done like leader EC to like edit composer JSON. Or I think his one was like, I think remember actually say you do like literally do control S instead of doing colon WQ because it was one or two less key presses. I feel like that's when you get blurry lines then because you get people who are like, this works for me, but then you get people like say, oh, it needs to work on every version of Vim everywhere. And you need to stick with the defaults. And yeah, it's probably something that
I
is probably
my like
probably the best, I think.
general rule would be like I use the default when one exists, and I add key bindings for things that don't have them is my kind of like general philosophy. And it's not that often that I'm using Vim on a server or somewhere else where I don't have my .dot files, but it is nice that most of my muscle memory transfers. So yeah, I don't rebind like saving or any of that sort of stuff. And I kind of just use leader key mostly for any of like my custom things, which is normally plugins and stuff. But yeah, keep things generally pretty stock.
Yeah. I seem to remember, I think one in your Laracast one, actually, I think you were adding like the leader carrot or something. So like, I think it switched to the opposite TMUX session or something, because like that's what Vim does. It was, so I can see where those sort of mental models can be reused across multiple things as well. If there's a precedent.
Yeah, well, all those sorts of things help to have, yeah, some sort of system, even if it doesn't make sense. Like, I don't really know where the carrot thing comes from in Vim, but at some point I learned it and internalized it, and so then it just made sense to do it in TMUX. But in isolation, it would look completely crazy if I just did that in TMUX.
Yeah, I think that's everyone's thing with TMUX. It's like, yeah, why is it the percentage key to make the split? Why is it not this? And I think, yeah.
The percentage one I kind of get, because it's like you've got the two circles and then there's a line cutting them in half. So I imagine that each circle is like a pain, and they started off as like just a big zero and got sliced in half into two small zeros.
Yeah, that's, I guess, pushed the way I thought of it as well. Then a lot of people are like, oh, I had a key mapping that does the split. And then certain other people are like, no, just use the defaults because they're there. So it's probably just worth, yeah, each their own. But I think that's the thing with, then you can customize these tools to work for you, which I think is really important. And people can decide whether they want to stick with the defaults or do something crazy, or where on that line they are.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you're running Linux. Which distro of Linux are you running out of interest?
Fedora at the moment. Well, okay. Fedora for basically the last, I don't know, probably 10 years. So when I say at the moment, it's been a while.
That's a long moment, yeah. As you said, you've been doing Pro for long. So what got you into Linux then, first of all? If you can...
Sorry?
So do you remember what got you into Linux then, first of all? Is that the terminal thing again, or did that just come
back? Yeah, it was the same
way?
Sort of thing, like, yeah, seeing, there was a friend that I saw doing all sorts of crazy stuff on the terminal, doing stuff on like remote computers and everything, and not having to use like VNC or any really heavy things like that. I feel like things like IRC really got me into computers, and like having like an IRC client running over SSH inside TMUX, so you could have like this long running IRC session on dial up on this server. And then, but you can just like connect into it and then resume your session, and all the chat history is still there because you, like, your client never disconnected. So yeah, I've always found Linux pretty fascinating and just, yeah, very hackable and all that sort of stuff. And I love open source and that whole kind of mentality of being able to, you know, like repair your own tools and see how they work and understand how they work. That's probably what kind of got me into it. And I went through phases of trying all different distros. You know, I've done Arch, and I think I started, what I've started on? Probably like Debian, and then like Ubuntu came out, and I used to get like the free CDs that they would send you out and all those sorts of things. But then, yeah, I mean, compatibility with things was always annoying with Linux. And so at some point I was like, I want to stop like having computer problems and having to like constantly fix things. So I'm like, I'm just going to buy ThinkPads, because all of the like kernel developers seem to use ThinkPads, so they're going to be very well supported. And then use Fedora, because a lot of them are working for like Red Hat. And so Fedora ends up with a lot of good support on ThinkPads, and that kind of just became my default. And yeah, I kind of entered a new phase where I was just more about getting other things done and not like messing with my computer as much. But I'd kind of built up a lot of that knowledge, and then just found, yeah, Fedora and GNOME was, yeah, just got out of my way and let me use my computer.
That's cool. Yeah, similar things like the NeoHim config. I think you can take Linux configs too far as well.
Yeah.
I've been running NixOS for the last couple of years, I think, and that's the same. Like, you can refactor that, or you put stable and rolling, and it's just like, yeah, at some point to stop editing my OS configuration and do that project work that I need to do, because that's the priority right now.
Yeah. I remember it probably still exists, but there was a thing called Linux from scratch where you would build your own Linux. So I did that. That was really fun. Like, it's ridiculously impractical to actually use for anything, but as like a learning thing to actually like bootstrap a kernel from like a host operating system and then install all the bits and pieces you need, like all the GNU stuff, and compile it all yourself. That was, I don't know, I feel like that was like a really good exercise to do, which I would highly recommend anyone who wants to get into Linux and get a much better understanding of it, And so then, you know, I was like, oh, cool, I'm going to build like my own Jess OS kind of thing. And then realized that was a terrible idea.
Yeah, someone's been, not seen so much of it recently, but someone's been building their own OS based on Nix. And yeah, I think they found it and were streaming some stuff. And yeah, it seems like what they've done with it is pretty cool. But yeah, again, it's like, yeah, down that rabbit hole now. So maybe how far do we want to go with this? But yeah,
Interesting, I mean, stuff. If it's, I think like it's really fun as a hobby and it's a thing to do. I think that if it starts getting in the way of like actually getting the things done you need to get done, then it's maybe time to like, yeah, ease up a bit. But if it brings you joy, then I'm all for just hacking and experimenting and breaking things so that you can learn how to fix them and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, good skills to have. Yeah, I think they sort of apply then to the sort of real world things as well. Like, I can debug this problem, and I can take that and learn from it. So
I always think, self-taught developers have that extra special troubleshooting skill because they basically learned by continually making mistakes and then having to like figure out what they did and why it broke.
Yeah. I've been coding since 2007. I'm still always making mistakes. Figure out why stuff doesn't work. So I mean, this continuous feedback loop. But yeah, it's really interesting. I seem to say this every episode, but I do mentoring at a boot camp. So I mentor people go through this boot camp where they, you know, 16 weeks, so zero to nothing, sort of zero to employable thing. And
nice.
Yeah, to see then, like, especially this, they've just finished their sort of group project that they had to put together in a week. And you're looking at, like, how did you guys manage to do that in a week in a group of like three or four people? And yeah, it's a superpower, I think, be able to sort of have this idea and be able to then, yeah, literally like code it up and
have the motivation and persistence to make it happen.
Cool. I was thinking how to phrase this question, I guess, but
sure.
Like I said, I've been in Drupal for a long time. It's about the same type of time Simon's been doing it. So yeah, 2007 I started coding, and then 2010 I went full time in it. So this was back sort of Drupal 6, Drupal 7 time. And then Drupal 8 was the one where they introduced Composer and some of the Symfony components and all the sort of third party stuff, which is where I get these wrong way around, which are not invented here and probably found elsewhere. I think that's the right way around. So yeah, and obviously then as we've built on that and seen that continuing as we've brought in more stuff, and then of course with Drush bringing in prompts as well. Of course, Composer was the thing that really sort of kickstarted this, and be able to pulling all these other packages and everything else. I don't know. I just think it's, I said Niels was again at the DrupalCon conference recently talking about Composer and Drupal's implementation of GitLab and Composer and everything. It's probably not a question, but it's like, it seems like a really interesting time to be in PHP, in the PHP space. I don't know if you've got thoughts around that, but particularly with like, it's like things like the PHP Foundation, and I've seen about like the open source maintainer thing yesterday was going on. It just seems like a really interesting time to be involved in it. I don't know if you've got any thoughts.
I feel like PHP is going through, I don't know how to phrase it, but like it's getting like a new lease on life. I mean, the whole, you know, there's a whole PHP is dead thing, and I don't believe PHP was ever dead. I think that's just complete, But I do feel like there's a rejuvenation at the moment. And I think it kind of started with like PHP 8. I feel like things kind of, I don't know, the trajectory of PHP just like was kind of maybe flatlining for a little bit and then has just started rocketing up again. So yeah, you mentioned like PHP Foundation, lots of cool stuff happening through that. Really cool to see. You know, companies like sponsoring PHP and putting money into PHP. And then yeah, like the open source pledge stuff that came out yesterday.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
I mean, that's just open source in general, but like it was really cool to see on the like the logos on there, like one Laravel, obviously very biased, but really cool seeing Laravel. I saw like Private Packagist was on there. I was like, yeah, like PHP is like well represented here, which is
sticker.
very
Yeah,
cool to see.
Like packages sticker. Like from Drupal. No,
So
I think it's
yeah,
really
I
good.
think that like, yeah, and all the stuff in the PHP is doing lately, I don't know. I'm very, very excited. I think, yeah, I'm really excited about the stuff we're doing at Laravel. I feel like we're helping to push PHP, you know, forward. And there's like even like influencers and stuff taking notice of it now. Like, you know, Primogen's been doing a lot of PHP related stuff. Like he came to Laracon. He
That's right,
gave
yeah.
like a absolutely beautiful talk at
Yeah.
Laracon.
Oh, that hit me, that
And
did, yeah, when he was doing that. Yeah. Watched it
it
afterwards.
was such a cool talk. And I think like my favorite moment was he had to pause because he was getting quite emotional, and the whole audience just started clapping for him and encouraging him. And it was just cool to see, like, yeah, that PHP love, right? Like, I don't know, I feel like the PHP ecosystem and the community has this really cool, I don't know, we've never been like the cool kids, right? Like, PHP's never been this cool language. So people's egos in PHP land don't tend to be, you know, super big, all that sort of stuff. It's just a lot of people getting stuff done, making a living, having fun, and supporting each other. And yeah, so it's really cool to see Primogen and all those sorts of peeps doing Laravel PHP stuff. And yeah, more people taking notice, people switching from like Node primary stuff to PHP. That's been really cool to see. So yeah.
Yeah, I've never really bought into the thing of like, you know, any sort of framework wars or what. Yeah, I guess there's like
No.
a lot of comparison with, you know, Symfony and Laravel, but like Drupal and WordPress always get it together, get the same thing. Then you get cross language things, like you said, with people going, oh, I'm a, you know, you should be doing this in blah, 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 instead of in PHP. And I think because there's a lot of people start out with it, or at least they did. You know, I guess now JavaScript is more, that's the one that they do on the bootcamp that I'm working on or bantering on. Whereas I feel like a lot of people's introduction to programming is through PHP, and the language is a, lets you do stuff. I was trying to say, like, it's not like one of these sort of strict languages where you have to write it. Like you could potentially write some, well, you could probably write bad code in anything. This is probably not the right answer. But yeah, you know, I think people get bad memories almost of it because they think to what they started out. I'm sure if I look back at the code I wrote back in 2007, it wouldn't be good. But I think people still think of PHP or Drupal or WordPress like in the same way, or Laravel, I guess, in the same way, because they use that version early on and don't know or haven't sort of seen some of the new PHP 8 things or the way that Laravel or Drupal works now.
Definitely.
Yeah,
I
so
mean,
it's great
yeah,
to see
if
Prime
people's
and other
last
people doing that.
experience was like PHP 4, then, and they're looking at that through like a 2024 lens, then of course they're going to think that PHP's garbage, right? Like, but they're looking at something that is not the case anymore. Like, you know, the version of many other languages that are out around that time have also evolved and changed. I think PHP has probably evolved more than most. And it's just like, yeah, kind of, it's potentially not true, but I feel like it probably has evolved more than pretty much any other language. And it's kind of, to me,
Say
stayed very,
probably.
very relevant. And yeah, like there's a lot of love in Laravel community for Symfony. Obviously we use a lot of Symfony components. Yeah. I think people should use the thing that they enjoy, that brings them joy and that they're productive with. Sometimes you've got to be pragmatic for various reasons, employability, solving a problem. You know, if you're building something for, you know, on Lambda or whatever, then it's probably better to use a different language, because I think PHP on Lambda is probably not easy.
Yeah,
but yeah,
I haven't tried.
use what you love. I think DHH is really on the money with like his whole thing with Ruby. That's the language that kind of speaks to him and all that sort of stuff. And he says, you know, people should find their own version of that. If it's not Ruby, that's okay. It's like, what is that thing for you? And for me, that's PHP, but I also don't think that it's the be all and end all for everybody, but I would like to, I'd like people to at least consider it if they're kind of starting out, and to see its strengths, right? Like PHP has strengths, it has weaknesses. Yeah.
It's like, use the right tool for the job. I think is that,
exactly, yeah, yeah.
That's better doing PHP or this bit. Like I've done, and I think this is also something I picked up from Laravel, was like adopting Vue as a thing. Like mm-hmm. they solve sort of different problems. And, you know, I've built Drupal projects with a bit of a Vue app in it. And my day job one has a lot of Vue components sort of sprinkled in because they need that reactivity to update every minute when, you know, a new thing updates or whatever. So, yeah, it's looking at these things pragmatically, I think, and picking the right thing that fits the problem, not trying to make the problem fit the thing. I think that's the way I always tend to think about it.
Yeah. But I think also like respecting the thing that you enjoy as well. Like, I don't think you always have to choose the absolute optimal thing and try and kind of chase after that thing. If the thing that you enjoy working with and are productive with, that might be the right tool for what you're doing, even if it's not the right tool for someone else solving the exact same problem.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Everyone's got their own context and their own ideas of, do things.
It's when things get like real kind of tribal, where it's like, no, mine is better than yours and all that sort of stuff. Like,
right.
I don't know. I don't see that as being helpful for anyone.
No. And I think, again, like being sort of outside of this a little bit, you sometimes see like the Laravel Symphony thing, like guys sort of pushing each other on to go like, oh, that's really good. Now we're going to sort of push us to do something new. And then of course then like prompts has come out, but I've then seen like, hopefully I haven't imagined this, but like Nicholas Greg is reaching out then and sort of saying, how do we pull prompts into Symphony?
Yep.
Yeah, things like that. So I think there is a really good sort of respectful sort of thing and collaborative thing going inside PHP, which I think is great. You know, I think it's helped push, you know, say Drupal project further and be able to reuse and not have to write everything from scratch and to go, I like this part of Laravel, I'll pull that in, or I can pull in, you know, obviously things like PHP unit or pest, you know, to speak about advancement. To be able to do that has been awesome.
And like Pest is a great example of something that was inspired by like the JavaScript Node ecosystem as well, right? Like Prompts was inspired by Node, the prompts package they use for Vue CLI, all that sort of stuff. I think when you kind of open your mind to what other people are doing, then you can kind of take inspiration from that and bring some things back to your thing. And then, other communities benefit from the stuff we do. And it's the same in like with competitive stuff. Like I love when Google and Apple are constantly trying to one-up each other because everyone wins, right?
Yeah. It took me a little while just to realize that Pest was PHP jest. A little while. And I went, and that clicked, like you were saying. And it's just, oh yeah, that makes sense. Why did that take me so long?
Yeah, all this, like the syntax is very heavily inspired by jest.
Then it's taken on an extra bit then and gone a step further in some ways. So interesting to see then some of those things going back into Jest potentially and seeing those two sort of working together and, you know, Vim and NeoVim. So I think it always needs that there are these collaborative situations. So it's not all like this is bad and this is good or whatever. I think
And when you take an idea from somewhere else, you kind of have to translate it into what makes sense in your thing as well, right? So like, you know, Pest being inspired by Jest, but it's still done in like the PHP way of doing things. So it's like ends up being its own thing, but then has that inspiration and then brings in that kind of PHP flavor.
That's cool.
I wanted to try and make like a pretty distinct UI for it that looked quite different than what the others had. So I kind of went heavy on like the box drawing characters and all those sorts of things to try and make it real feel like webby and all that sort of stuff so that it, because I think like the first like proof of concept I did, I was like, can I just make like a pixel for pixel or character for character, you know, clone of the Node one just to kind of, so that I wasn't focusing on what it looked like. I was just focusing on like behaviors and listening for all the different key inputs and how do I like redraw terminals And then once I got that done, it's like, cool, now I get to like make this look the way that I would do if I was starting from scratch.
Yeah, I remember watching the talk where you announced it and watching you demo it, but I really enjoyed watching that talk that Joe did, sort of building stuff from scratch on stage. And I think he's probably said it 100 times, but like, you get nothing for free. And I think he
Yes.
was really sort of showing that, and it was like, oh yeah, and like the up and down keys don't do anything, or the backspace doesn't do anything. You need to do that. So it's interesting to sort of put some of that context behind what you'd shown and what you and yeah, what you did with prompts. So
Yeah, the whole idea was
yeah.
to try and create this like API that felt like you were using the stuff that you'd get
Cool.
the stuff you get for free in the web. You now do get that for free when you use prompts, but yeah, prompts itself, it's just echoing like ANSI escape sequences all over the place to erase parts of the screen and move the cursor so it can redraw this bit. And even like the cursor that you kind of see on the screen as you're typing and move the arrow keys to move the cursor, that's not the terminal's actual cursor. That's just a block with its text inverted so that it is white on black or black on white, depending on your theme. So it's like a virtual cursor. All those little kinds of things, getting like building the text area so that the words would like wrap. And when you draw the box around stuff, you've got to still put all the space characters so that the lines around the box all line up. It's
Yeah.
yeah, like the box doesn't just draw itself in a square. It just wants to just be have this like kind of ragged edge on the side. So you've got to put all the padding in yourself.
Yeah, a lot of work's gone into that, I imagine. So yeah, thank you for sticking with it, because yeah, I think I was really happy to see it then. Yeah, when I upgraded Drush in that project, I'm like, oh, this looks different. So yeah, it was just great to see, because I guess Drupal particularly has used a lot of Symfony components, so it's good to start seeing like in core, so as well as other things. So yeah, glad to see some Laravel stuff sort of coming across there as well.
And I
Yeah,
think
so
there
it's really
is
cool.
still hope for prompts to potentially make it into Symfony. The only reason that it, like the only kind of roadblocker to that is that prompts doesn't work on like native Windows. It works with WSL, but it doesn't work with like plain Windows because of some limitations in the way things need to be drawn. The PHP APIs just don't let you do that at the moment. It's technically possible, but it needs changes to PHP source. So there is work very, very slowly happening to try and get that working. So at the moment, when you use prompts, if you're on Windows, we actually use Symfony Console as a fallback. So we switch back to using Symfony's one. So they can't use prompts because we have to fall back to them kind of thing. So once
Okay,
that's all
I remember you
resolved,
saying.
I think that then there's even possibility that prompts could make it into things like Composer potentially. Which would be really, really exciting to see. That'd be a dream come true.
Yeah, that's gonna be great for you then to be like, something I did is now used in all these other places, all these other places
Yeah.
on different projects. I imagine that'd be really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. I join a new project and like, they're using some of the modules that I wrote or
Yeah,
something. It's like,
it's
yeah, that's really
exciting,
cool.
right?
Yeah, no, that's really cool. You still working on, probably as you mentioned about changes to PHP source, are you still working on that? Because I know Laravel is on board a lot of people recently, and with things like Laravel Cloud, there seems to be a lot going on with you all at the moment. Like, so is this still your sort of focus, or are you on to anything new or anything that you're looking at?
I'm working on a new project at the moment that we'll be announcing at Laracon Australia in November, so just under a month away. So that's kind of what's been taking my time up lately. So I'm really looking forward to sharing more about that. Yeah, in just under a month.
That's
But
cool.
yeah, I
Yeah.
still am, I guess you could say, probably like the primary maintainer of prompts. Taylor kind of generally asks, like gets me to review pull requests to make sure they all kind of make sense and all that, because I've kind of got all the industry knowledge you get from messing with terminals for such a long time. But yeah,
Yeah.
it's been cool. Like I've built quite a few things at Laravel now, and yeah, maintain them, and yeah, we get like all sorts of cool. The prompts has had probably. It's been one of the most active in terms of community kind of contributions from like of all the things I've worked on. So we've had entire brand new prompts created by like other people, which has been really, really exciting to see. So that like our text area component was contributed by Joe Tenenbaum before he joined Laravel. And I like to think of that as like almost part of his audition in some ways, like he was doing all this cool stuff. And then, yeah, when he then applied for a job, it was like, yeah, you fit.
Rocks up a job interview. Yeah, I did this.
I did this, yeah. So, I built this
the job.
Component.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I've not been to LaravelCon actually, or any sort of Laravel conferences. I've been to a lot of Drupal ones. I've been to things like PHP UK and sort of the PHP conferences, which I think is awesome. Not to go off on this tangent again, but I don't think there is like a JavaScript conference. I think it was like a React conference and a Vue conference.
It's React ones and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, but I like that there's a LaravelCon conference and the Symfony conference and Drupal, but there's then like the PHP conference as well. We all get together. I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've not been to a LaravelCon. I think I've submitted a talk once or twice to some of them. But yeah, maybe next year I'm going to have to make an effort to go, because they do them in the US and Europe. And yeah, they do like two a year, right? Like the DrupalCons do.
We've got four kind of like official kind of ones. So we've got, yeah, US, EU, India, and Australia.
Okay. So they're counted as official ones. I know. The Drupal,
those are the
Drupal
ones
exactly
that can
doing.
Like use the kind of the Laracon name, and then there's
okay,
other
perfect.
ones that I think they call them like Laravel Live. So I think there's like Laravel Live
Right.
UK. I honestly don't know like who, like when people can call it what and all these sorts of things, but the Laracon
Right.
ones are kind of the more official ones, but they're all run by like local organizers and all that sort of stuff.
Do we know where it is in for Europe next year? Has that been announced yet?
Amsterdam.
Amsterdam. Okay, that's cool. I've been, yeah, maybe I have to try and make it out there. I've been to Amsterdam for DrupalCon a few times. But yeah, Laracon seems.
Yeah, the venue
awesome.
We have it at, I think it's the same venue as it was last year. Absolutely beautiful venue, beautiful city.
Mm-hmm.
Would highly recommend it.
Yeah, I did DrupalCon this year on short notice. This wasn't planned, but yeah, I'll, yeah, it's spread your wings and get, because yeah, Laracons do seem awesome. And yeah, it's been great to see. The conferences, but also, yeah, as you said, to see like Prime and Teej and that, like everybody else getting involved in it now seems all really cool. And I think, yeah, maybe next time I have to make a trip to a Laracon.
Nice.
That'd be cool. Awesome. Where can people find you online, Jess? If they want to find out more.
I'm on Twitter/X, whatever we're calling it, Jess Archer Codes. That's pretty much everything. I don't tweet a huge amount, but I do log in every day and I read a lot, but I don't tend to post a lot. So yeah, that's where you'll find me.
Cool. Okie dokie. Thank you for joining me today. I appreciate you. It's late for you because it's.
That's all right. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for taking the time. Thanks everyone to listen to the Beyond Blocks podcast. I've been Oliver Davis.